Welcome to the Mock Stars Podcast. I am Menace, one of your hosts, and I'm here with Rampage.
Hey, what's up, buddy? Super excited to be here. Super thankful for you. Super thankful for this podcast. Would you tell them where to find us so we can get into today's topics?
Yes, if you'd like to support the show, you can find us on YouTube where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. We are 2 subscribers away from reaching that magical 1,000. If you don't know, now with 3 episodes back, you got to go back, at least listen to the last 3 episodes to find out why that makes sense. You can also find us on all major and minor podcasting platforms where you can leave us a 5-star review to make us look super duper cool, but I don't think you can look much cooler than me in my freaking Wizards Barge magic shirt today.
That is cool.
But you can find us there, and you can see that shirt on YouTube. You can also support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead. For $3 a month, you can become an official Pepperhead. Have your name turned Dr. Pepperhead on the Discord server. Because if you didn't know it, this is the number one show on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper. 23 magical flavors, the nectar of the gods, the most delicious beverage on planet Earth. All right.
Very much agree. Today we are sporting 1 strawberries and cream Dr. Pepper. I will say it's a nice change of pace. Not their best work. I'm pretty partial to the original, but not bad.
So
I'm feeling a little pink today.
Ooh. Let me throw something at you real quick. All right.
Evening, yes.
We didn't talk about this pre-show. This is a curveball. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So this restaurant that we just opened up, the bar is making a watermelon syrup. And so I was sitting in working and they came over like, hey, do you want anything to drink? And I was like, give me a watermelon Dr. Pepper, please. Because also unconditional, when they asked me if I wanted the job, I said only if we have Dr. Pepper on tap. And they made it happen. They made it happen. So we don't have root beer at this restaurant. We have Dr. Pepper. So they whipped it up, and honestly, man, I might be giving Dr. Pepper some ideas here and not being able to cash in on any royalties, but watermelon Dr. Pepper, holy cow, it works really, really well together.
Yeah, that sounds like it has legs. I you mentioned the lack of root beer. I've been pretty anti-root beer my whole life. I got the privilege of introducing some coworkers to a Dr. Pepper float. So instead of a root beer float, you put Dr. Pepper in ice cream.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I think I know there are some root beers out there. For all you root beer fans, I will give this concession that there are some root beers that are actually good, but they got to be spicy. I love me a good spicy root beer. All right. Got to have that. Certainly it can't be Barg's, can't be A&W.
Yep.
But it's got, you know, that homemade stuff. That being said, root beer is completely interchangeable with, I think Dr. Pepper is just the superior version. Sure. Yes, it is the all encompassing Dr. Pepper. Also, I'm at the beach today. What's up? And it is Thanksgiving, the day that we are recording this. So make sure you get out there and, be thankful for all of your things, all your entire Magic card collection, and be thankful that the Mock Stars have 2 new tokens in their possession. We have the Goblin, which on screen is super awesome. They actually, in person, they light up. Like the foil, I get all the tokens done in foil, and they just balance this Goblin just... Death Milk Designs never misses. Always hits, right? And then even the Monarch token is just crazy. The contrast is awesome. So if you guys want any of these tokens, you can join the Discord server, jump on there, send me a DM. And then once we get a platform, an actual professional retail platform built in tandem with Death Milk Designs, we'll let you know where to find that stuff. But until then, you can reach out on the Discord server, and I have all of the pricing and everything built in, pinned on the channel somewhere. I will have I'll put a link to it in the description below. All right, on today's show, before we go too far, I want to give a shout out to all of our Patreon supporters. You guys are awesome. We have Gabe, Mac Oyen, Definitely Jeremy, Mono Greg, Ravenlift, UWP Quirt, Will Rule, Poolboy Barry, Maybe Anthony, Ryan G, and Adam. So thank you all for your support, supporting the show. Makes us all worthwhile. You guys are awesome. So also, as a patron, feel free, drop your list in the Discord server. We did get a list dropped by Tordeath this week, which we are super stoked about. I think he's been working on this list for what seems like forever, but ever since Bloomborough came out. But the Killer Rabbit of Carbonog, which is a Balin the Haymaker list. And Rampage, you had the pleasure of playing Yancey's deck yesterday, right?
That is true. Yeah, I've seen this deck a couple of times now. It's so powerful. It is always up to no good.
It's got a few updates now with, the Avatar the Last Airbender coming out that were, after looking at this list, it kind of provoked conversation about Taeyeon, which we'll get into later. But the Badgermole Cub comes into play here, which I think it's just so generically good. Now my mind's starting to change. Last week's episode, I said, I don't think this is going to have like the power necessary to be really impactful in Commander. I think I was wrong. And I have no problem admitting that. There are so many dorks. I think every deck list I run has 7 to 9 dorks at any given time. So, this goes in, it creates another dork. For 2 mana, it creates a dork that taps for additional mana. But it's starting to see its way into pretty much every green list there is. It also gets the Cabbage Merchant, which is super awesome for Balin. So first, if you're unfamiliar with Balin, this was a CDH. As soon as it launched and soon as it landed, everyone was like, CDH potential, because Naya finally has a activated ability that says draw a card. So how do we break that? How do we loop it? At the time, Dockside Extortionist was still legal, and so this list felt like it had legs. Like, it felt like, oh yeah, in Naya, doing Temur Sabertooth, doing Emil the Blessed, you have access to so many different Dockside lines, and then you get infinite tokens, and then Balin will just allow you to draw your whole library. And, well, we kind of all know how that worked out. Dockside is one of the most oppressive cards of all time. It got banned. So they kind of killed the deck a little bit, but Tordeath persevered and has continued to work on this thing and play it. And as I go through the list, I realize, there's a lot of really unique pieces that make this deck function. Like here from Tarkir Dragonstorm Commander decks, he's put in this dog warrior called Einok Strike Leader. Whenever you attack with this creature and or your commander, for each opponent, create a 1/1 red goblin creature token that's tapped and attacking that player. You can sacrifice this creature. Creature tokens you control gain indestructible until end of turn. This is a card of all time. I don't know how good it is. Has he busted this out against you in recent games?
Yeah, we have seen it. The fact that the tokens come in tapped is a little unfortunate for Balin, but if you're doing this early, it kind of doesn't matter. Those tokens are going to be untapped when you finally get to Balin, which you were talking about as a high power commander. It's got all the stuff. It makes the mana. It draws the cards. And if you really need it to, it's a win con. You can just punch someone in the mouth with it.
Yes.
But this Strike Master, or Strike Leader, excuse me, ignoring the fact that it is a dog warrior riding a cat horse, like how cool that is. It serves you. It makes you tokens. It facilitates a strategy. And then because everything else in this deck is making tokens, it provides protection for all of those. So phenomenal include, I think, here.
Yeah. It as the deck evolves and as it grows, like Ocelot Pride is super awesome. Your life gain ability, I'm not sure how much life gain he's actually incorporating into this, but Ocelot Pride is a one mana doubling season. So it really makes a lot of sense in the deck when you're trying to create tokens. Tutaru Taru from Final Fantasy, another really great card that whenever an opponent draws a card, if it isn't that player's turn, you create a tapped treasure token. And then there are just all these, as you go down, like the Cabbage Merchant, huge, right? Whenever an opponent casts a non-creature spell, you create a food token. And I don't think I went over this, but whenever you tap two untapped, you can tap two untapped tokens with Balin to add one mana of any color. You can tap three untapped tokens you control to draw a card. You can tap four untapped tokens you control, put three +1/+1 counters on Balin. It gains trample until end of turn. So all of these things just really lend to the strategy and how powerful it can be. I, for one, am a big fan of Arasta of the Endless Web, like the original Cabbage Merchant, for one more mana. But it just never saw enough play, and I'm so glad that it is ending up in a deck that, you know, can use it, can utilize it. So it basically, in tandem with Balin, does the same thing the Cabbage Merchant does.
Yep. Right? Arasta was one I wanted to highlight as well. I think the Elesh Norn here is super good. I haven't seen a deck be able to utilize the Hiroki, the Dust Drinker, in a way that Balin can. Cut all of your opponents off of mana, and Balin gets access to its own form of mana in the form of tapping those tokens. Knuckles get some highlights here. A high power deck on Sigarda, yes, giving all your hex proof is insane to see. There's so many cool includes.
Yeah, and then Tendershoot Dryad. I remember when I first started. Maybe it wasn't when I first started playing Commander, but when this card first came out, it was, I don't know, like $30 or $40. And I was like, five mana for what? And then I got to play against it one time, and I was like, oh yeah, every upkeep, that's pretty good. And then Coma came out, and then I was just like, okay, yeah, that's a disgusting, disgusting effect. So Tendershoot Dryad, even better here, because you're getting, four tokens around the table. Perfect. Perfect for Balin. So yeah, really exciting, really great deck. Scoot Swarm, crazy, crazy, crazy if you get to capitalize on its full scale power and creating additional copies of itself to, you know, I'm guessing that's one of the lines to be able to draw your entire library or create an infinitely powerful Balin is to be able to abuse Scoot Swarm with how many tokens that it can generate. There's also Walking Ballista, Heliod. So yeah, this deck list is a lot of fun. It runs really cool things that almost are off forgotten about, like Signal the Clans. You know, this is an instant for a red and a green that says search your library for three creature cards and reveal them. If you reveal three cards with different names, choose one of them at random and put that card into your hand. Shuffle the rest into your library. So you either choose three redundant effects and you get one of them no matter what, or you kind of like choose one of three lines that you have access to in the moment. It's three stacks pieces. What do you think is going to help you best? It's like slow down the game. Do you get a Ranger Captain? Do you get a Delny to magnify the strategies? Do you get a Containment Priest, a Collector Oof, and an Elesh Norn? You know, or do you go for your Academy Manufacturer? Do you go for your Rosie Cotton? And whatever you have access to at the time is what makes sense. So I think it's a really cool, really cool include as well.
Yeah. One thing I want to highlight is the Yasharn. Played against this, had a Yasharn dropped on me. Felt very implacable. Very good. Does a great job at doing, filling that stacks role. And the other thing I want to highlight with this deck that we haven't talked about yet is the drip.
Oh, super, super drippy, baby. Drip, drip. We also sang a little bit before we recorded when we talked about Yasharn a little bit. And it was like, it's been a while since I seen Yasharn in a deck. It's been a while. So yes, Yasharn making a comeback. This deck, or this card's so good at, from Zendikar Rising, but players can't pay life or sacrifice non-land permanents to cast spells or activate abilities. You couldn't even believe how much stuff this shuts down. Fetch lands. Nope. Like treasures. Nope. Clues. Nope. Any of those, like, yeah, any of those things. No. So, yeah, Yasharn's pretty good at stifling a lot of effects that still are pervasive and still around in today's meta. So, really great card. And also Wandering Archaic. Wandering Archaic, super great. All right. We have thoroughly talked about this killer rabbit of Kerbanog. So, let's go into this really cool thing that is happening in the world. It's funny how we humans, we invent things to further streamline our Magic the Gathering experience. So someone, I'm not sure who, but Rampage made me aware of it today, and I have not yet played with it yet, but there's this new platform to us. You might not be new to it, but it's called EDH Play. This is a cool new platform that basically you can webcam Magic with your friends and with your community, but without actually busting the webcam out. You get to play with like the Moxfield playtest as your platform. You don't need to actually build the deck. You submit your deck list, and then it generates the deck, it shuffles it up, and as long as you're trusting of your opponents, right? This doesn't take away from the experience, I think, at all, other than the feeling of having cards in your hand. I think that's the one thing that it takes away. But it's a really cool idea. Rampage, have you played with this yet?
Yeah. I've convinced a few people to play on this with me. We got to try it. One of them, when we loaded in, we were talking about playing, and they're like, "Oh, I've never heard of that." And within 5 minutes, we were playing our first game. Like, it's super easy. You just need a Gmail. You log in, like you said, it's just like Moxfield. When you talk about trust, I mean, you get the same level of trust when somebody's tutoring their deck on a webcam game. You just kind of trust that they're doing the right thing, right? But this is like gold fishing on Moxfield. I don't know about you, but I spend a lot of time on Moxfield gold fishing decks, trying to figure out what hands feel good, what a comfortable open is, getting familiar with that. And I've always wanted to play webcam Magic with Moxfield. And this is a phenomenal way of doing that. You're all on the same platform. You can customize your sleeves. You can customize your play mat. So it's not just the grid that's in Moxfield. You can really make it your own. If you become a patron of this website, you can customize even further. But it works super hand in hand with Moxfield. You upload your deck. It takes 10 seconds. It even like puts the tokens in. So tokens you need from your deck, you right click, make a token. Everything you need is there. You can exchange cards like you can't on webcam games. You can put cards on other people's boards.
Right, right.
It's super cool. It's super easy. It does your mulligans for you. It's just a phenomenal tool. It's something I would highly recommend to anyone wanting to play some webcam games.
Yeah, this seems so much more approachable. Like there are definitely times where I like striking up a webcam game is like this whole procedure where I gotta like get the deck out, shuffle it up, have my camera set perfectly, and then still like the cam can be somewhat questionable. Like I think in getting four people who have equal camera quality, but this just levels that out and just says, hey, submit your deck list, let's just play the game. So
Spell Table has a cool feature where you can click on the card and it'll do a little search for you.
Yep.
Here you just hover and you can read it yourself. So you don't have to read and explain every card as you're playing it.
Yes.
Your opponents have perfect knowledge like they would if you were a person.
And the person's webcam configuration doesn't really come into play. You don't have to like flip someone's video just so you can like see their board the correct way. This is basically a dual network for Magic? Yeah.
It does none of your triggers for you, just like Duel Network for all the Yu-Gi-Oh kids. Yes. What up? Dueling book.
What's up, dude? What's up, dude?
A little more recent Yu-Gi-Oh kid. You have to take all the game actions, right? So when something gets milled, your creature on board that cares about milling isn't going to trigger. Like, you have to manually do it, which is good, which is what you have to do with cards anyway. I wouldn't want it to be like Arena and kind of do everything for you. I think it's really cool in that aspect. You can put your lands in front like a good Christian, where they're supposed to be.
Slam dunk! For all you psychopaths out there, put your lands out front.
That's where they belong. That's where they're good.
Oh my God. Someone tried making this argument. Okay, time out. Real quick, aside from this.
Please.
I was like, I can't remember where I was, if it was on Reddit or if it was actually on the Discord server, but someone was like, the reason that you're like, the game was originally designed with you to have your lands out front. And I was like, what? No, that's it. And then they're like, well, how else do you think Swamp Walk and Mountain Walk and Forest Walk worked? You know, like, you had your lands out front and they could, and that's how they got through that way, you know. So they, if they had Forest Walk, yeah, they break right through, unblockable. You know, and I was just like, that is not it. That is not it. That's not the reason why. And then someone quickly debunked it, which is like, no, you're an idiot. Here is a PDF of the original how to play Magic from like the 95 beginner's decks. So it was like, no, there's no historical nothing when it comes to putting your lands out front. It is a preference that proves that you our psychopath. That's it. Also, if you shuffle your cards in any way, you gotta have, like, if you have your cards shuffled in upside down and however you want, I'm judging you.
No, that's fair. You're allowed to judge on that front.
You know who I'm looking at
each way is disgusting. And yeah, that goes for certain viewers of this podcast.
We know who you are.
Bro, quit it.
There are some of you. No, I know one. I'm blood related to one. Kills me. all right. So it's a really cool platform, edhplay.com. You can find a link for it in the description below on the YouTube video, where you can also find the subscribe button. There's also a subscribe button right down there and a thumbs up and a bell. For the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper.
So if I was to play my deck with the cards shuffled every which way, I don't, by the way, but if I did, I would tell you, I would confess to that sin. I think it's good sometimes to confess, to air some of our bad habits and get that out in the open.
Yes.
Because it's what we use to make our decks better. So that's what Menace and I wanted to talk through today. We wanted to come clean on some stuff.
We just wanted to introduce EDH Play as a platform to call out all of the all the people who put their lands in front and shuffle their cards in whatever way they want.
As Usher once said, these are my confessions. And I want to come clean on some stuff. I want to have some time to air some of the sins of my past. My first confession, I'll be up front. When I say I'm going to combat, it's because I want to see what you want to do. I don't really have a plan. I don't really have a goal. But I'll be like, going to combat? Super serious? Sounds like I'm going to hurt someone? And I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just seeing what you're going to do about it.
You're looking for the Magic Arena trigger. You're like looking for to see if there's any stick. You know what I'm talking about? Like,
yeah. It doesn't just automatically pass because your opponent doesn't have anything. Like, there's something, and I'm reading faces. I'm looking.
Yeah. Next phase, waiting for stick. Yeah. By the way, bravo. Excellent transition into your confessions. Excellent. Amazing. Amazing stuff here, folks. Yes, this is time for confessions. We are about to turn the corner to a new year, and this is our confessions episode, because when the new year comes, we have resolutions. We are, you know, things we want to work on. But in order to work on those things, we do have to bring light to the sins we commit, right? My first confession is that I always, and it's just, it's the mechanics of the card that can, it's not that it confuses me, because it makes clear, very perfect sense. And it's one of the most embarrassing moments of my life, and it happens repeatedly. I always forget that Sensei's Divining Top can dodge removal. I will burn a Force of Vigor on one with no backup plan. And when we went to MagicCon Chicago, this moment still lives with me. But we were playing a Rampage. You and I were playing at a table. I think it was Chris or Rollin. I can't remember. But then we had a stranger at the table too. And I just remember firing off a Force of Vigor targeting a Sensei's Top and something else. And then he just goes, all right, I'll tap activate it, put it on the top of the deck. And I was like, oh, yep, you can do that. And then you looked at me and you were like, you got nothing? I thought you had a plan. And I was like, nope, I'm just really stupid. So, and it's that wasn't the first time that's ever happened to me. It's probably happened to me like at least 8 other times. I don't know why, but I always forget.
That is a benefit, though. If you just maintain a poker face, pretend like, you know, maybe you meant to do that. You were forcing him to use it. Make it look like you had a bigger plan. You know, I'm waiting for you to cast a spell that mills cards next, right?
Yeah.
That was your only way of getting rid of the top. Like, I'm assuming you have a big plan. As long as you maintain that poker face, don't let them know you messed up.
Yeah, that is my one skill. My demeanor does not change throughout the entirety of the game. I act with intention, and it might be stupid. It might be really stupid intention. But that's my first confession. I forget what cards do sometimes, even though I know what they are.
I will confess to keeping hands that I think are really good. There's some juice in there. They're very strong. I like them. And I will go about the game in a manner that makes me less threatening. I will play my lands in like a poor order. So I either look like I'm mana screwed, or I'm playing a lot of like tap lands. Like I don't have a lot of action to kind of let somebody else develop so that they look scarier. It's much easier to point fingers. Like I haven't had black mana for 4 turns. I got 3 swamps in my hand. I haven't had black mana for 4 turns. I can't do anything. Mm-hmm. And while that is true, it's not always the most representative of the juice I have in my hands. I will either color screw myself or make sure I'm taking less than optimal game actions. Oh yeah, I had to lay these cards in this order. It would have been really cool if I had them the other way, right? Kind of kicking myself, tripping myself a little bit, just to make it seem like I'm not scary or I'm not threatening. I usually just need to see a piece of removal burned. Somebody uses their Force of Vigor on a Sensei's Top. Now I know my Bolas' Citadel is going to be safe because the interaction at the table has been used. What are the odds that there's multiple forces?
Sure. I mean, pretty high oftentimes. Yeah. Now that's a good one, because it is a problem to become the archenemy so quickly. I think it has cost games when your goal, obviously, and by the way, for the collective world listening to this and who plays Magic the Gathering, the goal is to win the game, right? And there are so many times where I felt like getting out to a fast start was the way to do it, and I still do that, unfortunately. But there are times when you can benefit from just hanging back a little bit, but it almost feels like you're pulling your punch.
Yep.
And that's my confession. That's one of my confessions too, is that like I often pull my punches at tables if I feel like my start will not necessarily create an arch enemy out of myself, but create this perception that I'm not, I did not, or I broke the social contract, right?
Oh, where, sure.
Like, I play Birds of Paradise. They're like seven. This is two confessions at one time, I guess. I have like 6 to 9 cards that that I play in every deck. Like, not named Soul Ring or Arcane Signet, like Sanctum Weaver, channel mascot. What's up, Sanctum Weaver? But, you know, and like Birds of Paradise and all those things. Whenever I'm in green, I'm in those cards. And if I'm not in green, I have another 6 to 9 cards that are, that are also in those, like in Jeskai. Like, I have certain artifact packages that I like to run. But if my hand is juice, right? Like, in Jeskai, I love playing Ragavan. I think Ragavan's one of the better dorks. Yes, it has to make contact, but the perception of Ragavan, it really, you know, like, before we talk about, you know, what decks we're playing, what power level we're playing, what bracket we're playing, and stuff like that. If I, my opening hand, I'm sorry, I'm just a really good deck builder. Brush the dirt off my shoulders a little bit. But I oftentimes end up with my curve being like, I'm ready to make significant plays or like change the game state significantly by turn 4 or 5. But the I will pull my punches. Now I've my Marith deck, the dinosaur one I built for the Wednesday webcam wizardry.
Yep.
I went and played it out there and someone called me out for not agreeing to the social contract of saying, like, it is, that's a 4 by every margin. That's a 4. I'm like, there are 0 game changers in here. The combos that are in here require at least 4 to 6 pieces. Like, you know, there are no 2 card combos. Like, so the combos do revolve around the commander, at least in some way, but the whole deck is built around enrage triggers. So, but it was like turn 12 that I popped off, and then he called me out, was like, that's not a 3. So the next game, I pulled my punches. I played the same deck because I only brought the 1. And so, yeah, I pulled my punch. I had a birds in first hand. I was just like, nope, not playing it first turn. I'll play a land. Pass it, pull it, because I don't want to upset the, you know, the vibe at the table. So,
yeah, that is tough, especially you should. I'm so pro winning on turn 12 in a if you also agreed the bracket level was 3.
Yeah.
But I totally know what you mean with strangers. I had a Harbinger of the Seas that turns all non basics into islands.
Right.
I had a looped effect, and I made sure when I was playing in public, when that card was in my hand, that got discarded. I wasn't going to deal with it. We weren't going to talk about, because that's mass land denial. When you're with your buddies, screw them. I'm jamming the Harbinger. Like,
yes.
You're not going to get any lands, and I'm going to win the game. But in this like social construct where we have to also care about people's feelings, I dumped it. So I totally know what you mean there. That is a wonderful segue to my confession, is pulling punches, but in a different form, differently than you do. I will hold off on casting cards if I think it's going to make the game go longer. If I'm going to be game for another 30 minutes, 45 minutes, if I cast this card, either because it's going to make me take forever on their turn, or it's going to enable somebody to pop off and I have to watch them dirtle, or it's like a board wipe. We all need a board wipe right now. We need a mass board wipe reset so that they don't just swing out on their next turn and kill everyone. I'm keeping that board wipe safely tucked away in my safe at home. No shot am I deploying that. Just let them win. We'll get another game in.
Yeah.
If we're in a tournament, sure, slam it. Obviously, I don't know why you're playing a board wipe. But if we're just chilling and the game's already, everyone's done their thing, you know, we've gotten to, you know, turn 10, everyone's developed, and somebody's about to win, good. Let them win. I don't need a board wipe to make the game go another 45 minutes. I would love to start a new one.
Yeah. It's one of those things where it's more about your time than it is like, I love magic. At the end of the day, you're 70 years old. You're going to look at how much time you spent doing certain things, right? I don't know. Yeah, I get it. Also, board wipes do exist in CDH. Final Showdown, super good card. It's literally in every one of my builds that has white. Super good. What? Maybe that's one of my confessions. I didn't put it in the show doc, but I will confess this right now. I think board wipes are good in CDH.
Say more.
Yeah. Like right now, the entire format is ruled by creature-based combos and creature-based decks. Now, obviously, you'd love to have a board wipe at instant speed, which is why I play Final Showdown, because it has multiple modes that say you can all creatures lose abilities, like so shuts down like Sisay, Najeela, whatever, all those things. And then you can also deny card draw for Timna in those circumstances as well. And then on top of that, if the game stretches later and people are developing a board state, the board wipe aspect of that card can completely push certain decks out of the game. Board wipes don't necessarily take away a player's sense of or their interaction in their hand. There doesn't deny them card advantage or mana usually, but it does reset the board state and make them expend additional resources to rebuild themselves. So I think that they're absolutely at this point. No. Do I believe that sorcery speed board wipes belong? Yeah, they don't. Like Wrath of God, not good. You know, Armageddon. Armageddon's land destruction. But Damnation, no. Toxic Deluge, yes, because it's 3 mana. Yes, it's sorcery speed, but that 4th mana is just a little harder to justify. It's a little too late in the game where you can still put a Toxic Deluge on the stack on turn 2 to upset the rest of the table that have all committed to, you know, dorks or commanders early in the game. So, yes, I do think board wipes are really good right now because Kinnan's broken at the current point in juncture, you know, and you have to be able to remove it. And if you can get rid of multiple dorks or get catch Kinnan in the blast, like Force of Despair, we had our best board wipe episode, like our favorite board wipes in CDH episode a little while back. And Force of Despair is one of mine because decks can explode out of nowhere, generate, you know, resources incredibly fast. And that's where like Force of Despair comes in. It's just like, okay, that was way too much. Or like Kinnan is obviously like it just came down and it's already wreaking havoc. Force of Despair, kill it, you know, and when the next spell is on the stack. So I think sorcery speed one's not good, but instant speed removal board wipes are really, really good in CDH. They can be. There's my 2 cents.
What do you think of Vandal Blast making a comeback? I think the artifact hate is missed sometimes. And while we have good ways to kill creatures, the Toxic Deluges and the like, not enough hate is given to artifacts.
Yeah. And there never really was a lot of hate incorporated into deck building or levels of interaction, mostly because a lot of players have flexed a braid out of their lists where, you know, like 3 damage to a creature is not nothing, but also destroying target artifact. That effect is not out of date or bad. The reason that it fell out was because everyone just started thinking that it couldn't remove the One Ring. So why would I play it? It's the One Ring has changed the perception on and cards like a braid where I play Cast into the Fire, which is from Lord of the Rings. And it's in a braid with 2 modes. It's 1 in a red and it's deal 1 damage to up to 2 creatures. So you can zap a couple dorks, zap an Esper Sentinel, something like that. But then its secondary effect is exile target artifact. So you can get rid of a few things or for the remainder of the game. I really think that effect is powerful. Oftentimes when you're disrupting artifact strategies, you just need to know which one is enabling the strategy or the pinch point, or what is the linchpin of the deck. So yes, like I don't think Vandal Blast is really necessary as far as like a board wipe. For one mana, yes, you get to zap something at sorcery speed or destroy an artifact, but I do think that Cast Into the Fire is far more flexible because your game knowledge as a player, how much time you've invested in seeing all these different decks throughout your, you know, your experience, and knowing like, hey, if they, you know, a Phyrexian Metamorphs on the stack, right? Cast Into the Fire, zap the one, you know, exile the One Ring so that they don't get the One Ring. They don't give themselves protection. They are still vulnerable the following turn. You can upend a lot of players' expectations and strategies just by knowing and having the knowledge of having seen those things before. So,
Cast Into the Fire. Please excuse this brief interruption in your podcast while I put this in my list of cards I need to purchase, because this is the first time I'm learning about it.
Yeah.
Cast Into the Fire, which brings me to my second to last confession. Rampage has a bad habit of buying singles. I'll go on TCG Player, buy a whole bunch of cards around 2 a.m. And I will tell myself, future me is going to figure out what decks those are for. Cast Into the Fire just got added onto my list of cards I'm going to buy. I need it.
Bravo.
It's so cool.
Yeah, bravo. Another seamless transition.
Menace, you're a hell of a salesman when it comes to pitching cards. I want to use Cast Into the Fire now on a One Ring. How good would that be? How cool. I'd live for those moments.
Yeah.
So, 2 o'clock tonight, I'm going to go on TCG Player and I'm going to have accumulated a list of cards that I need to purchase. I've seen in play. I really want to test out. Maybe there's a new set that released. There were some hot cards on it. Put my list into TCG Player, buy them all. And then once they get here, I'm like, I got to figure out what I'm doing with this because I never have a clue.
Yeah, you can't tuck it into a box. Otherwise, it'll just disappear forever.
Yeah, I'll forget it existed, especially with my memory.
Yeah. Now, it's one of those things. I used to do it all the time. I'd be specking at like 10 p.m. and I'd load the card up. And it's this thing that happens when I'm buying cards that I load the cart up with cards that I want that I think are good deals, and I'll sleep on it, right? Mistake. Huge mistake. Because then I'll go back, look at my cart in the morning, and people have purchased like the last copy of a certain card. And it's like, oh, now you can't get that one. And I'm a shiny hunter. I like shiny cards. Why I literally buy all the tokens in foil. Cause I just like, I'm like, yep, I want to bend this in the light. I want to see the way it reflects, all that stuff. So I can't tell you how many times I've missed out on a $2 borderless foil Sanctum Weaver. And like the next one up is like $3.50. And I'm like, ah, that's just too expensive. Now the card is like $11 for a borderless foil. It kills me. But the card is so good. It's so good. You should play it more. Everyone should play it more. Sanctum Weaver, look at it. You know how many enchantments you play in your deck? Look at it. It's really good. That might be one of my weaknesses and one of my confessions in my deck building process, is that I find things that I think are just like the thing, my lines. And anyone who's played against me will know where to like stick their finger in and know how to sort of upend my strategies. I will say that, let me see. Yes, this is one of my confessions as well. If I have it, I have it. And I'm not going to not shoot my shot. I'm going to ask the table, hey, does anyone have interaction? And then they go, is the game going to end? I'm like, yes. Yes, it is.
Yeah, my way.
Yes, because this has gone on for far too long. You know, or like, I'm sorry, I have it. It's turn six. This is just what it is, a possibility. So even at weaker tables like bracket three or whatever, if it just comes up, we talked about this when we were talking about the expectations for brackets, right? If it happens one game, it's just the, like, it's Christmas land. There's just no, like, it's just how the cards fell to me, you know? And like, oftentimes it's just like, at some point, yes, your expectation may be upended. You thought the game was going to go a little longer, but little Bobby got to learn that who he's dealing with at the table. Okay.
This is menace magic, and you are going to learn today.
Yes. And you're going to see, and hey, was that a cool combo? The thing is that I'm never trying to like, be pretentious about it or be, you know, like in that moment of, explaining that I have this combo, I try to use it as like a teaching moment for like, hey, this is how the combo works. You know, if you've never seen it before, this is the line. I'll do this and this and that. If you do have interaction, this is where you can stick your finger in. This is where you can, what the piece you can remove to stop the combo. You know, try to it, because ultimately at the end of the day, as we're playing these, this game, we're all learning. We're all seeing more cards or seeing new interactions that we've never seen before. And the goal is to become better and better players every single day and every single game we play. So, yes, while I will, if I do have it, I will go for it and I will end the game sooner than a lot of people are expecting. I try to do also teach in that moment to say like, hey, this is how it happened. This is how you can stop it. Blah, this, blah, yeah. That. Yeah.
Yeah. And I hate, I think I'm in the same boat as you. I would hate to win a game just because an opponent of mine wasn't aware of a combo I had, right? They didn't use their swords at the right moment. And that's why I won. Now, sure, maybe I won because they weren't as knowledgeable. They weren't as skilled of a player. But I want my deck to be the best. I want it to win through, even if they were playing perfectly. And for that reason, I really like you said, explaining the line. And yeah, if I do this, I'm going to go get this. And I think it makes for a better environment to play in. People, I think, appreciate that.
Yeah, people appreciate transparency, like, more than anything. If someone goes on, if I don't try to shoot my shot, it goes around the table and someone else attempts to win. And then, I don't know, maybe my opponent next to me was peeking at my hand the whole time, right? And they're like, yep, why didn't you do that? And it's like, that kind of reflects on me as a player too. Yep. So it's also another confession of mine. It's not my fault that you don't run more interaction, like, in your decks. I know that there's a lot of like fun Rube Goldberg machines out there, but as you grow and you develop as a player, you're going to find that like, you don't need all of those like cogs and bells and whistles, that you'll find more success finding the most efficient cogs and the most efficient bells and the most efficient whistles for your decks that create the most enjoyable playstyle for you. Like, that's the whole concept of like soul cards, right? Is like, you find the wheel that turns the whole strategy and you magnify it. And then everything else that does not magnify that strategy, you pack in interaction. You pack in ramp, you pack in interaction. Ideally, your ramp is tied to the wheel, but the interaction around it keeps you in the game. You know, it keeps the game from ending. So it's not my fault. If I'm shooting my shot and you don't have interaction, it's not my fault.
I agree. Speaking on that wheel of things you're jamming into that deck, my last confession is about tutors. You should ideally, if you're building powerful decks, be jamming some tutors in there. My confession is I hate tutoring. Now, yes, some people don't like tutoring because this is EDH and it's a 100-card singleton format. Like, I want everything to be random. That's not me. I want to make the most powerful deck, and if that means I got to go get a tutor to put in there, I'm going to do that 100%. The reason I hate tutoring is the pressure, is the timeliness of it. Yes. Turn one, I have a land, and then on your end step, I'm going to vamp tutor. I have no idea what I'm going to get. I'm going to sift through my deck on your end step and pray it comes to me. I don't have all the pieces I need. I need mana. I need protection. I need value engines. Yep. And I have no idea what I'm going to get. And it's nervous and it's panic. every time I'm sifting through my deck because I want to make the optimal choice. And looking through 90 cards and deciding in that moment what optimal is a nightmare. I hate it. I would much rather just pass. And then once I, God top decks me the card I need, I can then tutor for the other piece. Then I don't have to make a decision. I know exactly what I'm going to get, but like, I don't know what is the correct term for this. We're going to coin it here right now. Mockstars Podcast, blind tutoring is what we're calling this. I hate blind tutoring. I can't do it.
It's one of those, it just creates a panic and anxiety within me when I'm like worldly tutoring and I do not have any idea what I'm doing with it. It's early in the game. I don't know where it's going. And it's like, what do I grab? Do I grab a Sanctum Weaver? How many times can I say Sanctum Weaver in this episode? What do
There's one
I?
more.
A couple more. Do I grab something to slow the game down, right? Because I'm panicking and I'm like, I just want this moment to end. Do I slow the game down to give myself more time to think about what I'm tutoring for next if I draw one? It's ideally, just not ideal. It is one of those things. Yes, I would love to build a machine that just works into itself and keeps the wheels spinning. But ultimately, you do need a few tutors to help you close out the game. I think that's a necessary thing, but it kills me. It kills me, kills me, kills me how much time it takes. Even for fetch lands, it's like, turn one fetch is, and then you're like searching for the land, and it's like the at the bottom, and it's like, and then they people have already been like land pass, land pass, land pass, and then you're still looking, and it's like your turn. You're supposed to keep going, and you hope another 30 seconds. I haven't found it yet, and you're shuffling, and you're like, can you cut this? Trying to be respectful, and you're just being disrespectful because of how much time you're taking.
It's not even like in that instance, it's not even what land you need right now. It's what land you're going to need 3 turns from now. You're trying to plan and you just can't. And I wish I had a super brain that was like, oh, there's a 37% chance that tutoring for an Esper Sentinel right now is going to yield me a victory. Like, I have no idea. I'm always winging it.
No, it's like that's a justified confession. It is one of those things where it always kills me, like to feel that I'm wasting people's time. My last confession has nothing to do with Magic the Gathering. Okay. I put it in the show doc and I figured it would create some conversation. I believe this to the core of my heart and soul of me that Mario Kart is a rhythm game. Change my mind. It is.
Say more.
Yeah. So, sorry for all you Magic listeners out there who are expecting me to continue to confess about Magic the Gathering. This one is just, it needs to be talked about. Somewhere it needs to be going to the space. Needs to be out there. Mario Kart, if you were playing the game and you're like, oh yeah, but the cars, you drive around the course and stuff like that. Look at the cart while you're driving. The cart never moves. Now, have you ever played Guitar Hero? Right? The stuff just comes to you. All right. And you got to hit the buttons as it goes. And Mario Kart is no different. The boxes come down the track and you run into them to get an item that is a your star power, right? And you use it to power up. But as you're going through the cart, you are just nothing. Space moves around. You ever seen that episode of Futurama where they explain how the engines work for the spaceship?
Yep, just moves it around. Yep.
Yep. It's Mario Kart, right? The cart never moves. Things move around it. That is my piece. Mario Kart is a rhythm game. All you got to do is find the rhythm, find the most efficient path, and you are just playing a song. The whole time you are just playing a song. It's oftentimes like when I'm drifting, I'm like playing music in my head, man. I'm just like, and I'm, yes, I'm half a mile ahead of you. Like, that's how good I am at Mario Kart. Not the new one because I don't have a Switch 2 yet, but all them old versions.
I can't even argue with your point. From as memory serves me, you are quite the Guitar Hero player, at least in the day as well. So it makes perfect sense with your justification there that it would translate to Mario Kart. I'm sure you're 100% correct.
It's I don't want to say yes. Yeah. Like, yeah, you know, I'm correct. Right. But hey, if you're out there and you see it differently, leave a comment in the YouTube section below. I just wanted to close out the show with, you know, or at least my confessions with this one point is that no matter, like, I hope this changes your perspective on Mario Kart, because it will make you a better Mario Kart-er. Like, you will become a better player of Mario Kart once you see it.
Okay. To close out the show, I have a speed round for you. I'm going to fire off some confessions.
Yep.
And you hit me with guilty or not guilty.
Okay.
Does that sound okay?
I'm in.
Okay. I think Sol Ring should be banned in Commander.
Not guilty.
I tell people my deck is casual, but it's actually a tuned monster.
Oh, yikes. Guilty.
Oh, we are outing you here.
Yeah.
I target the player who talks the most.
Not guilty. All right, wait, like, this is, these are things that I do, like, that when I say not guilty, like,
guilty,
me,
not guilty.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, not guilty. I target the person who plays, usually plays ad nos.
I hoard bulk rares for no reason.
I used to. I was guilty of that for sure. Yeah.
And then the last one, I say no infinite combos. I definitely run them. I just label them as loops.
This one's a trap. I am guilty if, like, it by definition, technicality, I am guilty. But the Forerunner of the Empire in Polyraptor is not infinite. Just saying it. Sure. The Forerunner kills itself. It will kill itself. That's the last one?
Yep, that was all I had.
Oh, yep. Okay. I feel exposed.
Yeah, what?
Any final thoughts, Rampage, before we get out of here?
Nothing here. I feel like my soul has been cleansed. I'm ready to take off.
Yeah, I unfortunately don't know if this will change how I behave. I'm still putting Sanctum Weaver in every deck. You know, it's just,
I say, isn't that the point? We confess, we're absolved of our sins, and now we can keep doing the same shit we were doing before.
Yeah.
That's why we confess, right? Okay.
Yeah. Yep. We are forgiven in the eyes of the Lord, Dr. Peppa, our great savior. Yeah. All right. This has been the Mock Stars podcast, the number one podcast on the internet for Magic the Gathering and Dr. Pepper and confessions. If you'd like to support the show, you can find us on YouTube, where you can like, subscribe, and ring that bell for more notifications. You can also find us on all podcasting platforms, where you can leave us a 5-star review to make us look super duper cool, help new people find the show. You can also join our Discord community server, where every Wednesday we launch a new cycle of webcam wizardry, where we have new rules that change up. You can play games on the server, earn pepper points, redeem those pepper points for cool prizes, physical or in-game. Play with some really, really great players, cool people, awesome. It's really this awesome program that it's Rampage's brainchild. So, yes, all the applause in the world. Yes,
appreciate that.
I hit the right button on the soundboard. People are clapping for you. Woo! All right, you can also support us on Patreon by becoming an official Pepperhead. Have your name turned Dr. Pepperhead on the Discord server for $3 a month, like Gabe, Mac Oyen, Definitely Jeremy, Mono Greg, Revenlift, UWP Quirt, Will Rule, Pool Boy Barry, Maybe Anthony, Ryan G, and Adam. Thank you all for your support. And that, my dear listener, concludes this episode of the Mock Stars podcast. May you ever find delight in turkey, cranberry sauce, gravy, stuffing, creamed corn, grandma's biscuits, cookies, and Black Friday deals. I wonder what TCG Player and Card Kingdom are doing for Black Friday deals this year.
I thought it was like 10%.
10%? Holy cow. Well, it's too late to talk about that. We're out of here. Bye. Peace.